You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you the best.
Halford and Bruff. You're listening to Halford and Bruff.
I do think that the Maple Leafs have indicated that they want to hire Brad Treliving.
My beliefs is maybe we'll hear something as early as today from the Leafs. Believe that Brad Treliving is flying in today.
Boy, that escalated quickly.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Bruff. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintec Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
I should call you Maddie because you're so mad this morning. Greg's angry this morning.
Why?
Well, why don't you tell him, Greg? We got time this morning. There's no sports to talk about, so we'll talk about your sports.
I got robbed three times in slow pitch last night.
Not once, not twice, but thrice.
In what way? Robbed by the umpire, robbed by, you hit a sharp grounder at someone?
Just defensive gems. There was one, a guy juggled it for like 8 seconds in the outfield.
Okay.
And another one, a liner, the guy jumped like 20 feet in the air. It was
20 feet? Wow.
Yeah,
you
it was,
some high
it was like
level.
He had a trampoline on his feet.
Wow.
Super skilled players in this league.
Holy cow.
So I came in this morning and I didn't even think it was a gentle request. It was just a suggestion about some audio. Laddie yelled at me. The dog barked.
Mm-hmm.
He got angry at me. But then, as a good coworker, good friend, I didn't bark back. I said, Greg, what's wrong? What's bothering you this morning?
Talk to me, Greg.
And then I found out it was a completely useless thing.
It's baseball.
No, it's not.
That's baseball.
It's slow pitch softball.
That's slow pitch, baby.
Without further ado, Laddie, tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. In news that wasn't a surprise to anyone, but it's comforting to know that the NHL follows the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
See, yesterday on the show, we had Frank Saravalli on at 6:30 in the morning. We said, Frank, we got a few days here where there's no playoff action. Stanley Cup doesn't start till Saturday. Do you think maybe, just maybe, all the NHL teams that were waiting to announce their hires are going to do it now when there's a break in the action? Then there was three. So congratulations to the National Hockey League for following suit.
Well, to be fair.
No.
To be fair.
I was fair.
They got to hire them. It's May 31st now.
Sure.
You got to hire them.
Could have hired them during. Look, no one would have been upset if they hired him right in the middle of a Dallas-Vegas game. No one would have cared. But they had to wait until that was over. So we begin in Toronto, where it's no huge surprise, but the news is apparently going to be made official within the next 24, 48, 72 hours. Former Calgary Flames general manager Brad Treliving becomes the new general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. So we got some audio here from our end. This is Nick Kyprios on in the morning with Fan 590, confirming the reports that were out there yesterday that Treliving is set to become the new general manager. Sounds like the announcement could come soon. Here's Real Kipper with more.
Right from the get-go, I might have been the first call that they made in terms of who's available and who can we start the process with. This went, this started last week. It went through the weekend. No question that there's a lot of work moving forward with some key decisions, key contracts, notably Austin's and Willie Nylander's. And they need someone with some savvy, some experience, the ability to come in and deal with it right away. And there's no question that the focus was on Brad Treliving, and that's the guy they closed out.
So the debate around Treliving, if indeed he becomes the general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs, is fairly predictable in that Leafs fans were just really frustrated that they couldn't go very far in the playoffs under Kyle Dubas. And, the best they did was the second round. That's the best Treliving did with the Flames.
Yeah.
So that's, I think that's, if Leafs fans are going to have a natural negative reaction to Brad Treliving being hired, that'll be it. It'll also be the Flames missed the playoffs this season, and this great general manager apparently made the trade that helped put Florida into the Stanley Cup final with Matthew Tkachuk, and now the Flames are stuck with Jonathan Huberdeau's contract.
Granted, his hand was forced, but still.
So look, a lot of this is, a lot of it's not recency bias, but some of it is, because the same people, some of the same people that will be upset about this were probably last offseason going, what a great job Brad Treliving did pulling that trade out of nothing when he was put in a bad situation with Johnny Gaudreau and Matthew Tkachuk. So, listen, everyone knows that the stock of GM goes of a GM and a player for that matter, or a coach, it goes up and down. I think what they saw in Brad Treliving, the Leafs, is a guy with experience in a Canadian market,
ties to Boston Pizza,
someone who's not going to be rattled by being in a big market like Toronto, and someone who's not afraid to make big decisions. And that's Brad Treliving. Brad Treliving is generally well-liked too, you know?
He's very well-liked. That's a big part of this. He seems like he's got a lot of friends.
Who else? That probably helps him, right? Especially getting a job in Toronto when your team is owned by corporate entities, big corporate entities. Probably doesn't hurt. But I think his experience in a Canadian market and just his general comfort level at operating in a Canadian market. Look at some of the other names that you heard bandied about. Maybe the Leafs were talking to them. They were all general managers with experience. Yeah. Bergevin, Trelli's name came up. I don't think the Leafs were ever going to go with a young general manager. He's got some progressive ideas. He's never been in this position before. We're not sure how he's going to react. We're not sure if he can handle the pressure, but we're going to give it a go.
It's exactly what we said.
That was Kyle Dubas.
Yeah. It's exactly what we said yesterday. It's like you bring in a player-friendly coach, and then when that runs its course, you bring in a hardliner. And then when that runs its course, you bring in a player-friendly coach again. And this is not unsimilar. It's very similar. Now, the reason that we're leading with this one is, one, it's obviously it's Toronto, a huge job. Two, this is a really, really fascinating dynamic that Treliving walks into here. Because, for starters, he's got a minimal amount of time to get into the position and then go about a offseason which is of vital importance to this franchise. Auston Matthews on July 1st has his no movement clause kick in, and he's eligible to sign an extension. So July 1st is a big date circled on the calendar. Take a couple steps back. In 5 days, Treliving has to go to the NHL scouting combine, which is important for the Leafs. They do have a first round pick this year. And he has to start going to work as Toronto Maple Leafs general manager. 3 weeks after that, he has the entry draft in Nashville. Then a few days after that is July 1 in free agency. He's got 10 unrestricted free agents. Now, here's the really interesting part about all this.
That's a good point that people aren't talking about, all the unrestricted free agents in Toronto, because everyone's been focusing on the core four.
Achari, Aston Reese, Bunting, Kampf, Kerfoot, O'Reilly, Simmons, Gustafson Hall, and then, of course, Luke Shen. 10 guys. Now, they're obviously not the core four. So you say, this is a really cool, if I'm looking at it from Treliving coming in, you could theoretically keep that core four together, which is a possibility, even though Auston Matthews would be traded by July 1st. But you could also really alter how this team looks without touching the core, if that makes sense. Because 10 unrestricted free agents, you have a lot of jobs to fill.
You don't have much cap space to do it, though.
No, but you're not bringing back a lot of these guys, right? Especially the likes of Bunting and O'Reilly. So it's an interesting gig. I'm very curious to see how this all plays out. Because
you know what I'm curious to know is who's been doing the work behind the scenes in Toronto since Kyle Dubas is no longer with the organization. Like, is it Shanahan? Has Shanahan actually been making some decisions himself? Like, in the conversations with Treliving, for example, I'm not throwing this out there as news, but in the conversations, Is he saying things like, we're going to trade Marner, right?
Yeah.
So put that on your plate. That's a to-do list thing.
Sure.
I've made that decision. Or maybe they came to that decision together, something like that. Or we're going to extend Austin Matthews. Or you're definitely getting a new coach because Sheldon Keefe's still the head coach. Because remember the stories we heard about Pittsburgh, right? When Jim Rutherford abruptly quit, the Penguins were put in this position of, oh my God, we got to go find someone real quick. And it was the middle of the pandemic, so they had to do all these interviews on Zoom. They ended up with Hextall and Brian Burke. And one of the things that's been reported is that when Hextall and Burke were hired, they were hired under the idea of you have to be comfortable with not bringing back Letang or Malkin.
Right.
Or trading one of those guys.
Right.
Now, what complicated the Pittsburgh factor is that Pittsburgh was then sold, and then the new ownership group said, you actually got to keep those guys.
Yeah. Remember when we said move them? Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
You didn't do that already,
So that's the Pittsburgh story. But I do wonder, since there are so many major decisions that have needed to be made in Toronto, that need to be made in Toronto, plus all the, you know, filling out your roster.
Sure.
Given all the unrestricted free agents, if they're kind of down the road already in some of their decision-making processes, because it's crazy to me to think that they got to hire Brad Treliving, for example, and he goes in there, I don't know, this week, and he has his introductory press conference, and then they go, I know you've been pretty focused on the Flames for the last few years, but right now you've got to dig through everything that happened in Toronto, make a bunch of calls, and then make a bunch of franchise-defining decisions in like 3 weeks.
No,
could you do it in 3 weeks?
It's crazy because he also has to make a decision on his head coach, right? It might not be. Sheldon Keefe
might have to interview some people.
Like, he's like, I got to do all these contracts. I also have to hire a head coach. And I think it's the other fascinating thing. We'll move on to some of these other hires in a second here. But to put a bow on this one, it is hilarious to me that the core four in Toronto fails yet again in the playoffs. And everyone's like, they're going to have to move some pieces. They're going to have to do this. They're going to have to do this. And the four departures right now are Kyle Dubas, Jason Spezza, Spencer Carberry, and maybe probably Sheldon Keefe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all the changes are coming behind the bench and in the front office.
They will come on the ice, though.
I hope.
They will.
I hope. I want to see this thing shook up because I want chaos.
I think they're going to trade one of their core four, but I don't think it's going to be Matthews.
July 1st.
I think it's going to be Nylander or Marner.
That's fair. I mean,
But a Marner trade would be complicated.
All of the deals would be complicated.
I had a few people from Toronto reach out to me and go, what about Marner for Pedersen? And I'm like, what?
What about it? Don't want that.
First of all, no.
No.
I think Petey's a better player than Marner.
I just don't like Marner.
I think Marner's a terrific hockey player, but I also think that the Canucks have the opportunity to lock up Pedersen this offseason to a long-term contract. Now, the response I got to that was, well, what if Petey doesn't want to stay? And then my response to that was, well, then we run around with our hair on fire for a little bit, and then maybe we'll consider Mitch Marner. But like,
let me do the running around first, then I'll get back to you.
The reason trading Mitch Marner could be complicated is he's got 2 years left on his deal. So if you're the acquiring team, forget about the Leafs for a second. I know people in Toronto sometimes have trouble with that. But forget about the Leafs for a second and consider another team, perhaps the acquiring team of a Mitch Marner. 2 years left on a contract is complicated.
Yeah.
Because you don't have any guarantee of the future. If, for example, Halford's hot take is that you're going to trade Austin Matthews, right?
Or by July 1st.
You're going to trade him by July 1st. That's actually a little bit easier because the acquiring team can just lock him up to an extension.
Yes.
All as part of that process, mm-hmm. right? When you're talking about Mitch Marner, you're like, okay, we're acquiring this guy, and I hope in a year he still likes it here.
Yeah, it becomes like a one-year rental, and then the second year is very dark and very mysterious. So that's the Leafs story, is the hires are coming fast and furious. The other one, which happened right after we got off the air yesterday, some big news out of Nashville that they had fired John Hines 46 days after the regular season ended, and they are reportedly going to hire Andrew Brunette, formerly of the Florida Panthers. Last year served as assistant coach in New Jersey. Now, you're first you're saying, well, who cares? It's the Nashville Predators. Like, it's a coaching change. No big deal. The really interesting thing to me is that this is the first signature move of the Barry Trotz era in Nashville. And don't forget, there's only been one other era of management in Nashville, and that was the David Poile era.
What took Barry so long to make that decision?
So I was reading an article from the Tennessean, and they said that he was very open about this, that he basically told Hines, I know you have 1 year left on your contract, but I'm going to just start interviewing other coaches. And he played it off as, well, if you're not doing this, you're not doing your job.
Really?
Yeah. And then it was like, if we don't really find the fit, you'll come back. And then they conducted a bunch of interviews. Apparently it was 6 different candidates that they interviewed. I don't know if they thought they were going to get Brunette or not.
I don't ever remember hearing.
I know we didn't really follow it that much. Yeah. And then so here's the few of the phrases from the Tennessean, who kind of took a flamethrower to the organization, specifically Barry Trotz. It said, Trotz, this is the quote. Trotz said he interviewed 6 candidates and narrowed it down to 3 finalists while still keeping Hines in limbo as a backup option. It wasn't until Tuesday, Trotz said, that he broke the news to Hines, finally pulling out the scissors and cutting the safety net with Hines' seat still warm for Brunette. Now,
here's the good news. 5 of the people that we interviewed, we liked you more than them. Here's the bad news. 1 of them we really liked more than you.
So here's the interesting spin on this. Is at first blush, you're going to say, man, they did John Hines dirty and that was ruthless and everything. But we also talked about, and we talked about this yesterday, taking risks to get better and getting better being the only priority at the end of the day, right? If your objective is to make your hockey club better every single day, then every decision you make, even if it's to get incrementally better, 1% better,
yep,
you should be cutthroat and ruthless in getting that 1% better because it's a parity league and there's not much of a difference between teams. And you sent along something yesterday. Was it from Cathal Kelly, that article, which said that a lot of NHL teams are risk averse just because with risk comes great danger.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes executives are like, I'm not a danger guy. I prefer the safety of not doing anything.
Coaches, too.
I don't want to look foolish.
This is the opposite of that. And it's funny because I don't know how many people follow Nashville all that closely, but in recent years, the novelty of being hockey and honky-tonk country and a relatively new team kind of wore off. And the hardcore fans were like, we are stuck in the mushy middle right now. And a lot of that is because of the way that David Poile managed. Poile was loyal. That rhymes. He was very conservative. Yes, he made some big trades throughout his tenure, but it was always sort of a, let's just keep doing the same things over and over again. Yep. And, it was a defenseman factory for a long time. Anyway, I think everyone knows what their sort of MO was as an organization. And at the end of the Tennessean article, it kind of said, look, you want to be cutthroat and you want to win at all costs and you want to have a new direction as a franchise. Welcome to it. Barry Trotz has just done that by kind of sewering a head coach that really I thought did a pretty decent job there. But at the end of the
day, I wonder if John Hines now becomes a candidate for any of these other jobs.
John Hines did a good job there. But here's the thing. He went 0-3 in the playoffs and didn't make the playoffs last year. So that was the bar for them where they're like, it's not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
But the team,
although their roster wasn't good enough.
The team that he managed to get wins out of last year at the end of the year, we used to bring it up all the time. It was borderline hilarious.
Yeah.
It wasn't just young prospects that they were bringing along, like Tommy Novak and Luke Evangelista. There were AHL journeymen, Kiefer Sherwood, Michael McCarron, and they were all playing and winning hockey games for them. I thought that was a good feather in the cap for Hines, but
for sure
he's now out of a job.
What was the other hire?
The other one, and this happened when we were on the show yesterday, was the Caps hired Victoria's very own Spencer Carberry as their new head coach and made that official, whittling the list down to a precious 4 vacancies for head coaching now. Anaheim, Columbus, Calgary, and maybe the big one is the New York Rangers. And then there's just the 2 GM vacancies. But I'll play some audio. Do we have the audio from Friedge now? It's about Carberry and then sort of the rest of the coaching carousel. Hey, Travis Green gets a mention in this audio. And then we'll come back and talk about the job that Carberry faces now in a pretty interesting situation in Washington, given what is at stake with Ovi individually and then the team collectively. Here now, Friedge on Spencer Carberry and the rest of the coaching carousel.
you know, there was a lot of interest in Carberry, but Washington wanted him bad. I think the Capitals made the preemptive move that they were going to get him, and I think Nashville was very happy to get Burnett. Burnett interviewed in a lot of places. He interviewed in Anaheim. I think he interviewed in Columbus. I don't know that he ever interviewed in Washington. I just don't know the answer to that. And I heard he was supposed to go to Calgary this week. So I don't know if he actually ever went or Nashville just ended that, but I think he was supposed to go see the Flames this week. So he was in a lot of demand too. So now I think Laviolette, I've said this before and I'll say it again, I think he's in the lead with the Rangers. And if he is the Rangers guy, we're going to know soon. So I think that's where that is. Now, Columbus, I think they're going to make their decision today. I don't have a great handle on it, but you can see the people coming off the board. Like Brunette's off the board. Carpery's off the board. I think Laviolette's off the board. You know, I have to tell you, I still have people who think it's going to be, who mentioned Babcock. I could be wrong. I don't think so. But, you know, his name has been around there. And Pascal Vincent, yeah. Travis Green, Kirk Muller, Patrick Waugh, I don't have a great handle for that.
So there's still lots to be sorted out in terms of coaching, but the Caps jumped the queue and hired Carberry. I just think it's a really interesting hire because, one, it's actually not completely from the NHL's recycling head coaches program.
So if – back to the GMs.
Yes.
If – Tree Living is Toronto's guy.
Yeah.
And Craig Conroy is the general manager in Calgary.
Uh-huh.
Pittsburgh would be the only one with the GM vacancy?
Right now, the only two GM vacancies are Pittsburgh and Toronto. And Toronto sounds like it's all sewn up, so it's just Pittsburgh.
But maybe also possibly Ottawa?
Ottawa?
Because we got to figure out their ownership situation and whether or not they, maybe an ownership group has someone in tow with them that they would take to Ottawa?
We're going to talk to Ian Mendez at 7:30, so in about an hour's time, coming up. And it's going to basically be, when is this going to happen? And how quickly are they, new ownership group, either going to enact change or give Dorion a vote of confidence? It's got to be one of the two, because that's the biggest order of business going into the NHL offseason. All these guys have a ton of work to do. And, I mean, personally, an agent of chaos, agent of change. Change is a good thing around the league if you're Vancouver. And I'll explain this by saying you want more guys coming in looking to either make their mark or make some changes, because that's when player movement starts to happen and that's when transactions start to happen.
Yeah.
The last thing you need is long-serving 10, 15-plus-year executives who are comfortable and like, let's just run it back.
Tied to their players.
Yeah, we'll hire a new assistant coach.
Emotionally tied, intellectually tied. To their players, like they're like, no, I originally thought this about this guy, so I must still.
You want movement everywhere. You want free agents flooding the market. You want guys demanding trades. You want GMs ready and active to make moves.
Hey, I know we're going to talk to David Amber in just a few minutes here, but I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Sure.
Because I know you did a bunch of research last night.
I worked hard.
You're such a hard worker.
Hard's a generous term.
Dubas says no to Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Because he goes to Ottawa, maybe he just doesn't want the Pittsburgh situation.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the other candidates there?
See, that's interesting, because you got the old run-of-the-mill guys, Bergevin, Shirelli, Jim Benning.
Right.
But you've got guys that I think would be...
Jim Benning working for Fenway Sports Group would be incredible, and I would watch a documentary on that.
Yeah, I mean, he's got ties to Boston. Fenway's in Boston. I don't think he's probably in the mix for that one.
That would be incredible.
Yeah, I think they're just like, it's Dubas right now, and I would be shocked if he doesn't take it because it's a job. But I would also not
he's
be shocked.
He's clearly waffling for some reason
because it's a disaster roster to inherit.
Well, maybe he's waiting for Ottawa. Can you imagine how attractive that would be to get the
stick
Ottawa
it
job,
to Toronto repeatedly
with arguably a better future, considering what they've got right now, and then you stick it to the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah. I mean, there's some great offers that Dubas could theoretically entertain. I mean, look, Pittsburgh at the end of the day, it's still a marquee franchise, a franchise that matters, and it's Sidney Crosby. So you can't really say it's not a great situation, but there are some major red flags. Ottawa, The storylines would write themselves. That would be a delicious narrative, right?
Be incredible. And he wouldn't have to move his family to the States.
Yeah.
So maybe he wants to stay, and they wouldn't have to move at all.
This is the best of Halford and Brough. Download the full show through Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you the best.
Halford and Brough.
We are not far away from a tradition unlike any other. It's not the Masters. It's Gary Bettman speaking ahead of the game one of the Stanley Cup final, his annual State of the League address. And there'll be, so I got to remember everything. There's the guy from Quebec who sits there patiently and then asks the question about Quebec getting an NHL team.
Right. That's a fine tradition.
Yeah, he's always there. Mm-hmm. There's the person that asks about Arizona.
Hi, it's me again. Remember me?
Hello.
Every year that guy, and it's so great. He just sits there patiently and quietly. He's like, I know my place.
Sitting in the back.
Smokes a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah, this isn't a front burner issue, but I will get my question in. So there's that guy.
We must do this again.
There's the the delicate dance continues, Gary. So there's the
we are destined to do this forever.
Yeah, the delicate dance. And then there's the Arizona Coyotes situation.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is somewhat unresolved. Now you've got the Ottawa sale. I wonder what else is going to land.
Salary cap.
Right.
Where's the salary cap going
to land? Salary cap going to go?
How are your talks going with Matty Walsh?
Oh, I forgot about Marty
the
Walsh.
New NHLPA guy. Yeah. I don't know. Are there going to be many conversations about replay, instant replay, anything like that? Do you remember when these things would be like, oh, should we really be reviewing offsides? And
The nice part about
Gary, by the way, Gary Bettman was always a little bit hesitant to go down the replay line because, love him or hate him, he often does see the unintended consequences. He does know that the games are going to be super delayed, that you're going to have, if you decide to review offside, for example, you're going to have a goal that's disallowed because someone was offside by a millimeter.
Yep.
Because it's either offside or it's not.
I remember that. Right? Remember,
it was kind of like, all right, well, be careful what you wish for.
All the delays are stupid.
Remember when we were at the Stanley Cup final in Nashville and there was a goal? Philip Forsberg?
Yeah, the Forsberg one.
Yeah, and he was offside by, I mean, it was a completely inconsequential moment in the game.
But
he
was still offside?
But he's still offside.
Still offside.
And I remember Gary, I call him Gare, Mr. Bettman.
Old Gare Bear.
His response was something like, a parent that did the I told you so. He's like, well, this is what happens when you let the genie out of the bottle. Or
well, someone, I think it was Harrington, actually asked the question, and it was such a badly worded question because he asked him, like, in a league that's looking for more scoring, how can you possibly be, you know, saying no to these goals? And Bettman's response was like, well, if we're going to review offsides, if it's offside, it's offside.
Yeah.
And like some people were like, yeah, but I was just talking about the plays that were like 3 feet offside. Well, if you review them, then that's what you get. It was such an easy answer. He was like, is there something harder coming? I like a challenge at these press conferences.
Ask me about Quebec. That's harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
No, Gary says the same thing about Quebec. We were very upfront with Quebec when they built their arena. We said there's no guarantees when you build your arena. You're not necessarily going to get a team, so go ahead and build the arena. It's a beautiful arena, but you're not necessarily going to get an NHL team.
No, that is the answer. You had a great answer to a great question. That's really well done. I'm not going to be all that curious about what he has to say because Bettman's guarded the best of times. There is, but look.
I will be curious what he says about the Senators. If he expresses disappointment, and if he, because there's two ways that he could go.
Disappointment in the Senators for what?
So no, not the Senators. Sorry, the Coyotes.
Oh, the Coyotes.
The Coyotes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna be very curious about the Coyotes. Sorry if I said Senators,
you
but
did, yeah.
the Coyotes situation, because I wonder if it's disappointment. I also wonder if we're gonna sense any anger in Gary Bettman that it went that way.
And statement was, I mean, the disappointment in the statement. That's
like anger at the Coyotes for screwing it up, basically.
Right.
For losing it and going into this with the confidence. Because I think what had to happen was Do you remember when the vote was lost? And then the NHL put out a statement basically saying that there was no, we're still committed to Arizona. It was a very short,
curt, if you will.
Curt, we're disappointed and we'll see what happens type of statement. I feel like the NHL and the Coyotes, to a certain extent, the next day had to say, like, okay, we got to pull ourselves together here because everyone's acting like we're totally painted into a corner here. We need to express some sort of stability and some sort of confidence that things are going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because when those statements came out, people were like, oh my God, even the league is worried about this now.
Yeah, they fought in public.
Yeah.
Like Milhouse's parents at that dinner party. That's what happened.
And I wonder if they had to have a Zoom conference between the league and the Coyotes and any other stakeholders and just be like, okay, we got to pull ourselves together here.
The narrative quickly.
You can't be crying at these votes.
Yeah, the narrative quickly reverted to we are committed to staying in Arizona, right? I mean, they got back on track, back on message. But yeah, it's all gonna be interesting because the state of the league right now coming out of COVID and trying to regain normalcy, it's really important. And there's a lot of different moving pieces to this. And I'm going to be honest, the biggest picture thing is that right now, this is meant as no disrespect to a non-traditional Sun Belt Final Four, but I've never recalled a quote-unquote normal playoffs where off-ice news has superseded the on-ice product in terms of captivating the audience and everything, right? You talked about replay. Will that come under scrutiny? Part of the reason why is like the last two rounds, and especially the conference finals, even if there was a replay, it just never rose to the level of fans and media frothing at the mouth. If the Jamie Benn situation had happened in a different market, it mm-hmm. would have been the biggest story for the better part of, what, 3 or 4 days?
I actually think an interesting question to ask, and Sportsnet should fly me to Vegas to ask this question and so put me up in a really nice hotel.
You got to bring his great questions to a national stage. We're too regional right now.
Is player movement good or bad for the league? Would you like to see more player movement? Would that be good for the league?
Jason, that's a great question. I don't have an answer. Well, I know the answer. The answer is yes, but it's a great question.
Well, I wonder what he'd say, though.
What would be the most politically benign statement he'd
have? He'd say, I'd leave that up to the clubs to decide.
That's the answer.
Whether or not it's good for their market, maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to go about it. Sad, but true. But I mean, the right answer is yes. We need more.
It's the same answer politicians make down in the States when the president is asked. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I'll leave that up to the states to decide.
Yeah, that's it. Just push it down. I don't want to deal with that. Brian Burke, who, say what you will about how often he speaks on big picture issues, sometimes maybe he likes to speak on them just so he can hear the answers. But, he's come out on a number of occasions and said, like, it is good for the league to have player movement.
Totally.
Retaining salary to encourage this and unlock the gridlock is an important thing. And I agree with him. And I don't think it's a bad thing for the commissioner to say it, but he's not going to say it. So I got to remember everything. There's the guy from Quebec who sits there patiently and then asks the question about Quebec getting an NHL team.
Right.
Bonjour, you cheese-eating surrender monkeys.
What we just have to call Thomas Grant's erotica. Thomas Grant's erotica.
Of course.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
Expected goals.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
Dog's model.
Thomas Grant's erotica.
8:04 on a Wednesday. I often wonder what would happen if someone that's never listened to the show before tuned in at the exact moment where that was going on.
Probably turn it off pretty quick.
Well, there's that.
No, the opposite. What is this?
Yeah, let me just pull over.
Like, aside from the fact
cops
that it's...
Woo, woo, yeah. Behind him. Yeah. Excuse me, sir.
Like, there's the...
Just listen to Halford and Prof. No, it's fine.
I mean, why does it sound like softcore pornography on the sports talk? And then, the cuts are so deep. The references are so, so deep. That I just... People be like, what is a Dom model? And it just works.
Yep.
You guys did a tremendous job.
Well, you know.
our dozens of listeners.
Inspiration struck.
There are no doubt thrilled. To the phone lines we go. Thomas Drantz, welcome back. Drantzer, Halford, Bruff, Sportsnet 650. What up, dude?
You know, I think everyone who ever hears that song is turned on for the first time.
That's true.
It's like, wow, I never knew those feelings existed.
Yeah. Shorty, I've talked to Shorty about it. Shorty loves, in large part because he's prominently featured.
He's in it, yeah.
Yeah, but he's like, it's got so many layers to it. I'm like, it does have those.
It's really good.
Drantzer, how are you doing right now? Have you got anything to do, or are you just making endless lists of how the Canucks might be able to move salary?
Yeah, I endless lists is really like a next 2 weeks endeavor. but yeah, I mean, endless lists is kind of what this time of year looks like. And, you know, it's been funny because you sort of go through free agent options. And like, we had Harmon on Canucks Talk yesterday, and he's sort of talking about all these options and guys he likes, and I went to the evolving hockey model, and then on air started reading him, like, do you like this guy at the sort of numbers that are associated with players, right?
Right.
And it's like, you know, Evan Rodriguez at 4x4.8. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh boy, you know, maybe that guy's not under the radar low cost option anymore. You know, it's going to be really tough. Like, you know, your Nick Bjugstads are $2.5 million players, probably with multi-year commitments into their mid-30s. It's going to be a very fascinating summer because name a guy you like, your Gavrikov, Barbashev, mm-hmm. Evan Rodriguez class, and you know, those guys are way outside the probable price range that the Canucks can consider, particularly in a universe where, you know, your favorite player who's actually good, I mean, Chicago's probably going to be there offering real money, right? Like, there's going to be teams offering real money that need to spend. There's not going to be a lot of cap lift, and, you know, the Canucks kind of need to clear the decks before we can really even start considering what they can realistically do. And until they do that, you know, I think we're more in the, like, how does Danton Heinen fit sort of conversation,
right,
in terms of what they can add to this team?
How does he fit? No, I'm kidding. Like Barbashev has probably priced himself out. I mean, the way he's been performing,
he's so good.
Yeah, he's gonna make a lot of money. So what other teams are you looking towards? I know there's been some talk about the Chicago Blackhawks and maybe they could be a dance partner with the Canucks, but who else?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is if you look at the teams with boatloads of cap space, like the teams at the bottom of the cap friendly page, you know, there's a lot of teams that won't be looking to spend, right? There's a lot of teams like Arizona, right, where they're going to find creative ways to get to the floor as opposed to, like, that doesn't actually require them to spend money as opposed to actually spending that cap space. There's Chicago, who, you know, is certainly looming large. And then, you know, there's teams like New Jersey who, yeah, they have $30 million or whatever and close to it in projected cap space. But a lot of that's going to be earmarked for Timo Meier and Jesper Bratt. And by the time it's all is said and done, like, they're going to have a tough time even extending Ryan Graves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's not really a good one. Carolina would loom large. They have a ton of cap flexibility, even assuming that they get Jordan Staal back at a pretty similar clip. But, you know, that's a team that likes to use, like, that's a team that likes to charge a fee for you to rent their cap space effectively, right? And that's tough. Like, that's not a team you typically want to do a deal with in the summer.
Right.
Because, you know, 6 months on, you're like, why did we retain on Norris caliber defenseman Brent Burns? Mm-hmm. You know, those are situations that I think are best avoided. So, yeah, I mean, it's a really tough situation when you look around the league and, you know, the majority of the league, something like 15 of the 32 teams are within $7 million of what we'd expect the upper limit to look like. Although I suppose there's some wiggle with reports that the league's going to try to push the cap as high as possible until, it, you know, they incur actual like a surplus escrow payments for the players, which won't be agreed to. So, you know, it's look, there's no question about it. The club still intends to try and move money. I still remain highly skeptical about their ability to do so effectively. You know, I think the way that they've put themselves on the back foot is more likely than not to result in a move or two that looks like a loss the day you see the trade come across on Twitter, mm-hmm. Like that looks like a painful deal. But, you know, they've consistently expressed confidence in their ability to do so. They were willing to put themselves into this bind, paint themselves into this corner. And, you know, they believe that they can get themselves out. So we'll judge their offseason based on that work.
Halford has some hot takes that he's been throwing out recently, just because he's Halford and that's what he likes to do. One of them is that Austin Matthews is going to be traded before July 1st. The other, the
countdown begins. Yeah.
He heard about the no move clause and he was just like, oh, he's definitely getting traded. Then.
When does the no clause trade kick in, Jason?
The no clause trade?
Or the no trade clause?
I don't know,
clause.
Buddy.
When does the no trade clause kick in?
July 1st.
That's right.
Okay. The other one is that the Canucks will not be selecting 11th overall. They're either going to trade the pick in its entirety, or they're going to trade down regardless.
Or up. They're just not going to draft at 11.
They're just not going to draft at 11. Would you care to comment on any of those?
Well, I could see that. That makes sense in my view, because if you need to clear cap space, like what assets do you have that are meaningful that could allow that to be a possibility? And it's like first, Hoglander, Podkolzin are sort of like the absolute top of the line items in terms of assets the Canucks have that are valuable, that contenders or teams, you know, like Carolina Hurricanes team,
right,
would value in terms of, yeah, oh, sure, we'll take a bad contract. Yeah, no question.
Mm-hmm. And why would they value those guys? Just so we can go through this.
Well, affordable,
yeah.
Right? Affordable, high upside, right?
Upside, like, yeah.
You know, the ability, and in Hoglander's case especially, right, there's a track record. Like, at the end of the day, you know, you got to think about it this way. Like, think about how we talk about Klimovich, right, where it's like, or an Atu Ratu, where it's like, man, they're so young, though, right? Like, they're not even, they're you know, barely AHL eligible, and you got to give them some time, right? Now Hoglander's a guy who's 1 year older, but has like 150 games in the NHL under his belt and has scored at a pretty credible second line rate, 5-on-5 over the course of those games, right? Like, that's, if you can plug a guy in at $1.5 million and you're like, okay, this guy can be a top nine guy for us, maybe, that's hugely valuable for teams. I mean, look at, you know, a Brett Howden in Vegas, look at a E2 Luostarinen type in Florida, right? Like, having an E2 Luostarinen level contributor on your third line at $1.5 million who can complement, you know, all the stuff that Lundell and Sam Reinhart's doing, like, that's a major reason why the Panthers are going to be playing for the Stanley Cup this week, right? Like, that's a major reason why Vegas has been able to level up is they've gotten those contributions from your Howden class guys. So, you know, that would be the bet effectively. So yeah, I mean, those are the assets I think that would resonate the most, and those are tough assets to lose. If you're a team like the Canucks, you know, I mean, Hoglander and Podkolzin contribute immediately to winning next season in your mind's eye, right? Like, they could at least, and the first probably doesn't, right? The 11th overall probably doesn't help you for a year or two,
mm-hmm.
if you nail it, right? Like, then you have to nail it. And so, you know, could a organization that, this is how I viewed it too in 2021, right? It was like, at the end of the day, when I look through what the Canucks can do here, when I look through their best assets to incentivize moving a bad deal, like, number nine loomed large for me then, number 11 looms large for me now in a similar context. And yet, I think if you're the Canucks and the story you're telling yourself internally is, you know, we've been retooling, right? Like, this has been our retool, right? The bad year we had, that was part of the plan to retool. Look at all the talent we've brought in with like Kuzmenko and Amon and Joshua and Hirose. And like, you know, when you look at those guys, we've basically brought in an extra draft class, right? And our prospect pool, which all the media and all the independent people who evaluate this stuff say is like, what prospects, right? The answer instead is we're actually ahead of schedule. We're ahead of schedule on bringing in these depth prospect contributors in a world where that's the story you're telling internally. Like, after this summer, the retool is over, and we're going to be in our window.
Right. And that's what they truly believe?
Then you need to keep 11th overall pick.
Right.
Right? Like, in the context of that story, you have to keep the 11th overall pick. Yeah, I do think that that's what they believe.
I want to ask you about Toronto. And I know I do. And one of the things that I've been saying, and I don't know if I'm way off on this, is just like, let's say Treliving gets the job. Just the amount of time that he has before the draft and free agency to make so many important decisions in Toronto. Do you think there are some major decisions that have already kind of been made in Toronto?
That's an interesting one. That's a good question. The look, the dynamics in Toronto are strange, to say the least, at the moment. I think Brad Treliving is a pretty talented executive, to be totally honest with you. You know, I think there was a lot of things that went well during his Calgary tenure and a lot of things that went poorly. I think the goaltending, the finding a goalie issue has obviously been a long-standing problem in Calgary under his watch. You know, the Markstrom contract, you know, I don't hate it as much as other people. Like, I really don't think Markstrom is as poor as he looked this past year. And I will be 0% shocked if we're talking about, you know, the Markstrom playoff glow up at some point in the next year or two.
Yeah.
A la Sergei Bobrovsky. Like, I still think he's a talented guy, and he's given them, I mean, what, he was a Vezina nominee once. He had another above average season, and he's had sort of two seasons that were kind of iffy, one in which he was desperately overused in a dense schedule. So I'm not worried about the Markstrom deal. I don't criticize Brad Treliving that much for doing that contract. I think it was fine for the most part. But if, you know, finding the goalie and finding the coach, like, those were really the two things that feels like caused the Flames to waste a pretty talented roster that Treliving built. But those are kind of issues, like marginal issues almost. Like, when you look at the work, when you look at the way the Flames drafted, when you look at the quality of their moves, I mean, I think they were pretty good. I think they were pretty high, right? Like, this is a guy who...
Yeah, the roster building was pretty solid.
Yeah, I guess the other thing that I'd note is a lot of really poor free agent decisions, right? James Neal, and then compounding that by trading James Neal for Milan Lucic, the Troy Brouwer signing, and then prompt buyout, right? You can throw Blake Coleman into that class of decision, right? Like, really overspending on that sort of like gritty winger. But I like Blake Coleman. Like, I think Blake Coleman's a really good player, so I wouldn't lump him in, but I think he could. So I guess that would be sort of the other area of concern. That would be one thing where, you know, you'd worry about the Maple Leafs being like the team that overspends on Barbashev, based on Treliving's track record. But yeah, you know, I think Treliving's like an effective executive. I've enjoyed interviewing him or working with him in the past. I think he's a nice person. And I think he built pretty good rosters for the most part in Calgary that were, you know, sabotaged for one reason or another. And those reasons tended to be pretty fixable, like coach or don't hire Jeff Ward or don't replace Jeff Ward with Daryl Sutter. I mean, not things that are like outside the realm of possibility, not fundamental flawed stuff. So, you know, I don't think he's a bad choice. I do not understand the process that the Maple Leafs have gone through over the course of the past 10 days. I'm always deeply suspicious when a team makes a decision this big and doesn't appear to have done a search. That feels kind of Canucks-y.
Right.
I mean, you can think about the comparison with like the Pittsburgh Penguins process, which is ongoing, right? Or like how long and drawn out like Nashville's effort to, you know, evaluate Hines and ultimately replace him with Brunette has been.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds right? like I mean, the Capitals to talk to a bunch of coaches too, just to right, just like, to just to get some ideas.
Well, and I think the Capitals are a perfect example. Like when Ted Leonisis fired George McPhee, right? A decision which, by the way, maybe hasn't aged all that well. Although Brian McClellan's done a great job. Like McClellan was a pro scout on staff, like a senior pro scout on staff, who, you know, the story goes, went into the meeting and was like, "This is all the stuff we're doing wrong, Ted." And he was like, "You've got the job."
It was like a Costanza moment, like, hire this man.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the best of Halford and Bruff. Download the full show through Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.